It's the Puppet Parent Podcast, episode 46, Don't Startle the Seals. In this episode, we'll talk about dangerous puppet shows, sending our kids back to in-person school, and the tragedy of the barn fire at Burwell. It's all coming up next on the Puppet Parent Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, we are the Puppet Parent Podcast.
I'm Z.
I'm Chad.
And we are puppeteers.
We're parents.
And we have a podcast.
Yay! And this, I'm calling it because it's been 6 months since our last episode. This is the official starts of season 3 of the Puppet Parent Podcast. That's right.
Before, I didn't even know we had seasons 1 and 2.
Oh, yeah. Season 2 is when we got everything. I thought we got things together.
Okay.
And I think I made a big deal of it. I was like, this is season 2.
Okay.
And so I think season 1 was Puppet Parent Podcast. Season 2 was the Puppet Pandemic Podcast. Now, because we're wishful thinking, this is the post-pandemic Puppet Parent Podcast, P5, Season 3, let's go. And today, the theme of the day is danger.
Why are we starting with danger?
Because I had something dangerous happen to me.
Oh, okay.
And that's what sparked this whole thing off. But first, let's talk about our day, because we're not just talking about puppet stuff. Because we're parents also.
True.
It has been almost a month since our kids went back to school full-time, in person, plus after school. So they're locked in for how many hours is that?
It's a long time.
It's
from 8:30 to 5:30. But you know what? The after-school program is a lot of play. It's not like more work. And to me, it's like scheduled in play dates with their friends every single day, and also with kids from other schools too. And I feel okay about it. It's a very, very small school that they go to during the day. They are having some more exposure to other kids from other schools as well. But you know what? Everybody's being super safe. We're all wearing masks. And overall, the transmission rate in New York City is pretty low. So we're feeling hopeful. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to catch you up to speed, we took a year off from New York City.
Right.
We went out to the country, lived in my parents' house in the middle of nowhere.
With his parents.
With my parents. That was our little pod for 1 year. Then from June 1st to June 1st, we moved back. We started doing in-person shows. And we were like, our kids have been doing streaming school with no friends, no nobody for an entire year. It was just each other. So they became closer, good or bad. And now we're like, they need friends. They need to reconnect. And then that's kind of why we also made the decision to do after school, because it's like they just need more time to play with people and become better friends. And especially our littlest one, who is 6 now, he is a little social butterfly who needs to spread his wings, his beautiful wings. And so I feel like overall, like the 1 month in, they've responded very positively. And we, you know, all transitions are hard. We had like a hard first day. Mm-hmm. But then things got better, and been in direct communication with their teachers through this app called Brightwheel, which is great.
Yeah, we love that app. That's a great. It's been really, really good and positive overall, mm-hmm. and we're feeling really good about our choices.
Yeah.
So we talk a lot about choices with the kids, good choices, bad choices.
That's right.
And so we have choices as parents all the time. And if you're parents as well, you can relate, I think. You're constantly having to make choices. And so these were all big choices that we had to make about coming back, about starting up again, about after school, about what our schedules were like, and how, you know, we also thought to ourselves too with the after school thing, because we'd never done after school before with the kids. And you had to sign up for 5 days a week. They don't have to go 5 days a week, but you know what? If they're going to be signed up 5 days a week, they're going to go 5 days a week. The thing is that when we brought them home right after school before, it's not like we planned play dates before. Their school is in a different part of Queens where we live, and a lot of their friends were doing after school. And so this just made things easier on a whole lot of levels, and it just seemed to make sense this time. Everybody is in the same school and the same schedule for the first time ever. So that's also...
But both of our kids.
Yes, yes. And it's going well. I'm back at my day job. I work for a foundation, and I'm doing that 5 days a week for certain blocks of time each day. And the puppet company is continuing to continue. And Chad, I'm sure, will update you about some of those news items. But things are going well. And I just want to say a big thank you to everybody listening and watching for supporting us from the beginning of all this craziness. We wanted to create this podcast and create content like the streaming shows and the workshops that we made so that we could all get through this thing together. And a lot of you supported us in so many different ways, whether you financially supported us, you shared our stuff, you told people about us, you booked us for a show. We just want to say thank you so much, because we really felt buoyed by all of your love and support. And what it's true, that's a word, buoyed, supported.
I know, supported, you know, is better.
Floated
sounds like somebody saying boo.
No, well, anyway, buoyed. I'm trying to be positive and say all the things that we've been feeling, because that is very true. And as we've been performing more and more in-person shows in and around New York City, people come up to us after the shows and they'll say, you know what, we watched your shows during the pandemic. We watched your live streams. That was something that kept us going every Friday, and we just wanted to say thank you. And so that in and of itself is just, it's a gift to us too, to know that we made a difference for you and for your family in some small way. So yay, thank you. We're so happy to still be here and to be back. Can you believe it's October? We have to plan out our kids' Halloween costumes.
It seems so normal now. You know, once the kids went to school, the summer was over, the summer of like going to playgrounds and masks and still kind of feeling a little anxious, even though everyone who stayed in New York City was like, ho-hum, you know, whatever. They've been, you know, here for a year. We were some of the only ones who left for a year and came back. I feel like that was a constant comment for a while. It was like, I can't believe you guys actually came back.
Yes, I did hear that a lot.
There was this lot of like upper class and even like middle class flights away from cities into the countries. And if you moved away with your family, and we knew clients and people who had booked us in the past who did the same thing, who moved and bought houses. You know, we did not buy a house somewhere. We just stayed with my parents who have a house. But yeah, it feels good to be back. Feels good to be doing in-person shows with a mask, although that's its own challenge. So I do in-person shows indoors with a mask. I'm wearing a mask, audience is masked, but it is hard, you know, in terms of breath. Like even though I have like a big old opera mask with boning that helps me breathe a little bit better, I'm still like finding like, oh man, I'm just kind of like out of breath all the time, because talking for 40 minutes loudly in silly voices is really taxing on your lungs and your throat. And I hadn't really felt that until like these moments where I'm just figuring out like, oh yeah, wearing a mask is hard but necessary. So let's talk about our main theme of the day.
Okay.
Danger.
Oh, right.
Danger. Dun, 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 dun. I say this because something dangerous happened to me. And not like a scary kind of way. Everything's fine. So Sukkot just happened.
Oh, yeah.
Right? The Jewish holiday of Sukkot. It's like harvest time. It's like a harvest festival. And one of the traditions that the Jews, some Jews in New York City do, is you build a small, like a shack, like a tiny little booth called a sukkah. And a sukkah is, you can have, it's generally like a tear down, put up structure that has to have like a slatted roof. The roof can't be all the way built. So you put like maybe little sticks in the top. You have to be able to see the stars.
Yes. Yes. And it's temporary.
Yes.
Just for the week of Sukkot.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of amazing stories and traditions and fun. And we usually go in to a friend's place and have like dinner and
in
look in
sukkah.
The stars and their sukkah. Yeah. Our puppet booth is kind of like a sukkah. So anyway, so in the city, if you don't have a backyard space, you can't build your sukkah indoors. I mean, you could, but you have to see the stars is one of the things. So I've been to a couple different places in New York City where Jews have gotten a permit from the mayor's office to open up a couple parking spaces in front of their temple and build the sukkah there in the street, which is fine.
just like they've done with restaurants.
Right, exactly. Just like you've done with restaurants, you just like open up a couple parking spots for a week, for the week of sukkah, because it's a week-long celebration, and you put your sukkah there. However, this is also New York City, where, I don't know if you know...
In Manhattan.
Manhattan, it's especially infamous for people kind of losing their minds. Pedestrians just walking in front of cars. Cars, like, just doing whatever, like running red lights. People honking a lot. You know, kind of rule-breaking. It's kind of madness. But at the same time, I've been driving, you know, in this city for 11 years. You know, and it doesn't seem so bad to me. However, so... We were booked by a temple to perform outside their temple. And I was like, fine, that's great. You know what? As long as it's a good day, can you measure the stoop in front of your building? That's fine. I'll just go there. When I arrive, I notice that there's a big sukkah in the parking spots outside of their place. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Well, so they're going to do some programming there. Okay. So I realized that actually they want us inside the sukkah to perform on the street, literally performing on the streets of Manhattan, something I've never done before, ever. Okay, got it. Okay, so I'm starting to set up my booth inside the sukkah.
And that's fine, because it's an enclosed space on the street. Like, it should feel fine, right? Like, it should be okay.
Everything about this is fine, and we said yes. However, as I'm setting up, a delivery truck pulls up, right? And so there's space for three cars... four car lengths on a Manhattan street.
Like next to each other. Like two sides, cars parked.
Cars parked on either side of the streets. A delivery truck can park, and then another car can just kind of make it through. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those rules about learning to drive in Manhattan. If there's barely any space, you just kind of like just trust your deity and just go.
It's tight, but you can do it.
So there's a delivery truck and they're unloading. I'm like, okay, great. All right. They're going to be unloading. I got like 30 minutes to set up the show before the children come into the sukkah. Okay. I'm performing in the streets. And wait, I can do this.
I need clarification. Yes. So the sukkah's here. You have set up inside the sukkah. You're towards the edge of the sukkah, and the delivery truck is parked like on the other side of your stage.
No, the delivery truck is on the other side of the street.
Oh,
so we're in parking lot. We're in the parking space on the right side of the street. There's cars parked on the left side of the street. There's a delivery truck also double parked on the left side of the street, leaving one lane right next to us where traffic can just barely get by. And then I start to worry because as I get closer to where the kids are going to start to arrive, the delivery truck's still there. And there have been a couple of close calls. A fire truck had to get through, an ambulance had to get through, other giant vehicles trying to get through, and they're barely making it by like an inch. And one of them, the ambulance, clipped the sukkah a little bit, and the whole thing, because it's a temporary structure, the whole thing just kind of went, just kind of wobbled, and I was like, oh my God. Because the puppet booth that I have is 4 feet long, and it's like, I'm barely able to get beyond it, to get behind and to enter it, so it's right at the edge of the sukkah. So I'm on the streets, and I'm wondering, is this a time where I get hit by a truck?
I mean, it's a good headline for a news article. Puppeteer goes down.
Bad headline.
I mean, I don't want that to happen. No, anyway, sorry, continue.
I felt actual danger. I was like, this is dangerous. I said yes to this. There's real danger here. That delivery truck is not going anywhere. They're just I'm like, how much stuff are they delivering? So by the time the kids got there, thankfully, the delivery truck had gone. But for 30 minutes, I was sweating, feeling like, oh my God. All right, not only is it not safe for me, but like, you can't have kids inside on the street. I was just, the whole thing was like, this is dangerous. Have I ever felt this kind of fear before in a show? I did a quick like run through of all the terrible situations that we've ever performed in. I'm like, nope, never actual real danger. This is it. Wow, this is so memorable. And so I was taking selfies and like recording, and I was like, look at this ambulance, barely able to get by. All that stuff's on our Facebook page, by the way, facebook.com/wondersparkpuppets. So I was thinking, real danger in a show. What have we seen, and what do you know of where there has been actual real danger during a performance? Because usually in a theater setting, it's controlled danger. If it looks like somebody's pulled like a prop gun, you know, or some kind of prop knife on stage, if there's some kind of violence, it's all like, these are professionals. They know what they're doing. Usually there's never any danger. So my question to you, and to you at home too, have you ever witnessed or been in a situation, like a theatrical situation, where there was real danger? See?
Okay, so two things come to mind.
two things.
Yeah. Well, I had one, and then as you were describing it, I was like, oh, actually, I have two. Mm-hmm. So the first one is a company from Belgium called Théâtre de Unzu.
How do you spell that?
It's like Théâtre de Un Jour. Like J-O-U-R. Mm-hmm. And the title of the show is L'Enfant Qui? The Child Who. So anyway, I apologize for my French. I'm really trying, but also acknowledge my lack of knowledge about the language. I was at a La Mama Puppet Festival. We love La Mama. We love everyone there. Denise, Federico, Mia, the director, is an amazing space. They always bring in such great talent. This show from Belgium, I mean, I'm still thinking about it because that's how, like, wonderful it was, but it was also like dangerous.
In a fun way or in a way that were like something went wrong?
No, nothing did go wrong, but I was concerned in a way that I usually am not in theater. So it was a combination of circus and puppetry. And in the beginning of the show, it's about a child's fever dream from being sick, is what I remember the premise of the piece being. And the beginning of the show starts with this man, very muscular man. And he's like, in circus talk, like the strong man, like the muscle man. He's going to lift people up and stuff. But you don't know that at the time. He's just shirtless and he's on a big tree stump. And there's like dirt all over the floor. And we're all sitting in a circle and it's dimly lit in the dark. And you hear this sound. Yeah. And I'm like, what's that sound? What is that? And of course, because I work for this foundation and we get like tickets to see puppet theater because we have helped to fund the puppet theater, I happen to have quite good seats. And so I am
you're in the front row. Oh.
Yes. And as the lights are starting to come up in the very, very dim theater, you start to see the glint of a blade. And that blade is of a full-size axe. And that man, shirtless, buff man, is standing on the stump. And he is holding this axe, swinging, whoom, 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 with all his force. And I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Because, you know, he's probably not going to slip. But if he does, wah! You know? And
so
then,
how far away from your head was that axe?
Too close. It was too close to the point where I started to think, I think I'm going to move my seat. Like, I've never in my life thought that, but it felt too close to me. Mm. But I just kind of...
You crumpled?
I did. Yeah. I did. It was all I could do. I don't know. I didn't want to startle him. Because you don't want the axe to go flying.
Right.
You know, I used to work at a sea lion show, so you know not to startle.
Don't startle the seals, I guess, in the theater.
It's important. Yeah. So, anyway, then he takes the axe. Whoo, whoo, whoo.
He's swinging it.
And he's getting faster and faster in the inertia and the kinetic energy. Whoom, whoom. And then he goes, whoom. And it hits the thing, and the whole theater rattles for a second because the intensity of it, and we're all like, oh! And that's the beginning of the show.
So it was a real axe.
Oh, yeah.
Because it went in something.
Into the tree trunk he is standing on.
Wow.
Yeah.
I guess that's a way to start your show, get everyone's attention.
Oh, yeah. That was the beginning. And then there's a point in the show where they're doing this, like, hand balancing stuff where the woman is, like, her feet are in his hands.
So he's holding her up.
He's holding her up above him. And I remember that she's like twirling or something, but he has to keep changing his hands like over and over and over. And they did this for so long, and you can see the sweat pouring down him and the struggle. And I didn't think that he was faking like the struggle at all, because he was definitely like starting to get like really, really like shaky. Like, for real shaky. Yeah. And so, and the axe is, like, still on the stage. There are, like, I mean, and if she were to fall, like, she's all the way up, you know? I mean, we are close. That's... She's falling into us, you know?
Well, it could be like a stage dive. Just hold up your hands, right? And she falls into the audience, right?
Oh, three shows. Okay, so that was show number one. That was the first show that came to mind. Okay. The second show that comes to mind was...
So, a different show.
Yes, was a lumberjack themed circus show.
What is it with you and axes?
Well, it just came to mind. That was from Quebec or Canada. It was definitely from Canada. Yeah, I think from French Quebec. Show. Yes, they love circus, and I guess axes.
Was this at New Vic?
No,
yeah, I seem to remember there was like a circus show that was like axe or lumberjack themed.
No, it wasn't at the New Vic. It was presented at Skirball at NYU. Mm. And again, I got tickets to go to see that.
So they put you in the front row. They're like, she loves axes and danger.
I was just like, don't miss. But at least this one, it was a proscenium. Like, we weren't all in the round. Oh, wow. So it didn't feel quite as intense. So that's why that one didn't come to mind at first. And then the third thing.
So this is the danger of getting free tickets to a show. Or this is the danger of being like involved in the presentation of a show.
But that
is they're going to stick you in the front row where you don't want to be.
But that wasn't a puppet show. The second one was not a puppet show. It was circus.
Yeah.
So the third one was a puppet show, but not live theater. It was television theater. And it was a show called It's a Big, Big World, which I'm so happy to have been a part of. That was like one of my first big jobs that I ever got. I was an assistant puppet wrangler. I met so many amazing people, and it was awesome. But if you talk to anybody who worked on that show, they'll tell you it was a dangerous set because it was blue screen, right? And there were holes in the set, but you had a walk around character who couldn't see. And so you had to constantly make sure that Peter, who was in the walk around character, you know, didn't die. And
so he didn't have any way of seeing the floor, but he could see. He had a camera like Bear in the Big Blue House to see in front of him.
Yes, but the technology that they were using at the time allowed for them to do the keying in real time of the blue screen. So you actually didn't see the blue screen. You saw the jungle around you.
That doesn't sound helpful.
You didn't see the big blue hole that was like next to you.
So it's not Bear in the Big Blue Hole.
No.
Did he ever fall in?
I don't think he did, but our friend Jenny
fell
did
in.
And
yeah,
she
hurt
her back quite badly. Yeah. And then on that same set, but not on the set itself, but our friend Matt was in a crawl space putting away or getting puppets.
Oh, no, that was not a crawl space, because I worked as a PA for a week on that show after production was ending, when they were trying to wrap everything up. No, that was an attic space where you're in a giant studio and the ceiling is 30 feet high, and there's a special attic space where we had to bring everything up to there, everything that would fit through the hole into the attic. So there's a special ladder that goes all the way down 30 feet, because we had to build shelves up there. You had to walk 30 feet all the way up to this massive crawl space. And I mean crawl space, it's just like a big storage space. And he fell out of that hole, which means either he fell straight down 30 feet or he tumbled down the ladder 30 feet. Either way, that's just insane.
So he's lucky to be alive. So that is my third memory of danger in puppets.
So even if you're on a studio set, it's still dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I got plenty of stories from you know, shooting on location, but that's just different than like live theater and danger. So I guess the moral of the story is, if you want to scare your audience, have like live axes, right? Axe swinging so fast that you can hear the swoosh.
And I just want to say that our friends are okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and even our friend Jenny, who went into the hole and hurt her back, she got some therapy, physical therapy, and she is rocking it now.
She's okay. Yeah. She's doing great.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah.
So those are my danger stories.
So I will tell you. So
how'd I do?
You did great.
Thanks.
You did great. Adding to this, I will now regale you with a very sad story.
Oh no.
So what I wanted to do was start up. We were talking in previous episodes about puppet shows that we've seen that we really liked.
Yeah.
But in the danger episode, I have to tell you about the one thing you never want to have happen during a puppet show, during any show, is for the audience to be in actual danger. So I'm going to tell you about the one time where 78 people died at a puppet show. And so if you want to skip this, just fast forward a few minutes. If you're watching this live, just like tune us out. But it happened in 1727. It was a tragic barn fire. But I will tell you what happened now. So one of the reasons we did not perform live during the COVID pandemic when it was really bad in the United States is you don't want to be known as, you know, the puppet show where people died. Unfortunately, that happened once in history, and I will tell you about it. So in 1727, in England, in, I think it's like, it's ironically named, the village is called Burwell. It's so close to Burnwell.
Oh, no.
I know. There is a puppeteer who is touring with his family. So it's a husband and wife puppet team and their children who helped them out during the show. They're touring around and they decide to go to the village of Burwell and do a show. They do a show in the barn. They rent out a barn from like a local farmer, and word spreads around town and everybody goes to this puppet show. Now,
and that was called barnstorming. That was a real thing, going and renting a barn and doing that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it was on the 8th of September. So the huge crowd appeared, more people that could actually fit inside the barn. And at some point they had to turn people away, and people were getting a little like, I want to, you know, go in there and see the show. So the people who, either the farmer who owned the venue or the people in charge, not sure, decided, okay, to keep this huge crowd out, we're going to nail the barn doors shut from the outside. Not a good idea. But everything was fine. The show went on as usual, and some of the survivors said it was a very good show.
Oh, no.
I know. So what happened was, one of the people who didn't get to go in to see, who confessed on his deathbed, who he went to trial for this later, was acquitted, but then recanted on his deathbed. One of the farmhands was like, I work here. I want to see the show for free without paying. And they said no. And they turned him away. Well, because he worked on this farm, he knew that there was a way to get up into the loft above where the puppet show is happening and watch for free up there. So that's what he did. He brought his lamp, his oil lamp, with him into the hay-filled loft above the puppet show in the barn, where the doors were nailed shut so no one could get out or come in. And he purposely started a fire. So
he didn't start the fire on
purpose? He started the fire on purpose.
Oh.
It was claimed to be an accident at the time, but then he confessed on his deathbed that he did start it on purpose as a way to spite the puppeteers who told him he couldn't see the show for free.
Oh my.
I know. So what happens in a panicky situation, somebody notices there's a fire. I think it was reported that he called out, fire, fire, fire. People try to leave. They can't leave because the doors are nailed shut.
Oh.
Then people start to panic. When people panic, it's always a bad scene. Somebody was finally able to break the doors open from the outside. It's in the news reports that somebody used their head. People just kept smashing the doors. But by that time, the roof had completely set ablaze. The puppeteers turned to each other. The male puppeteer said to the female puppeteer, "We shall all be killed." And even though the doors finally opened, people were burning, and there was a mass rush for the door. What happens when you try to get out, a huge crowd tries to get out of a tiny door, is people trip. People trip on top of them, the people behind them tripping on top of them, and then they all get crushed. So many people died that way. it was a couple of people died of their burns a couple of days later. And all, it was, what did I say, 78?
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, 78 people died that day. They were basically murdered by this person who tried to get into a puppet show for free. But anyway.
Did we learn about this from my Flickr searching that one time and I found the plaque from it?
There is a plaque. There is a grave dedicated, like a memorial, set up in, I think, 1910, dedicated to the barn fire, the tragedy.
That's where we first learned about it. I used to look up puppet show on Flickr to find people's puppet show pictures, because sometimes you would find pictures of us from, like, you know, that. And I happened upon a picture of the plaque, and then we looked into it.
And we looked into it, and we're like, wow, what an awful tragedy. And it's just, so that was like real danger, right?
Yeah.
Me being on a street in Manhattan is like, you know, whatever. Everything was fine, but that was like the probably the worst tragedy in all of puppet history. I'm just gonna go ahead and just put that out there. And something that we never want to ever repeat.
I will say, you know, when you travel in to other countries and international festivals, oftentimes you will see these puppet buses that are actual theater buses, and you go into the bus and then you watch a show in the bus. I've seen it done a couple of ways, and one of the last times that I went to see a puppet bus show, it was like proscenium seating with risers in the bus.
Oh.
And it felt unsafe.
Yeah.
Because I just didn't feel like there was a way out.
Well, speaking of a way out, so often when I perform, I'm the only one there. There's like a person there, or they've just gone, you know, and you're in charge. When you're in charge, you have to maintain the safety of yourself and the safety of the audience members. So we've been doing these shows at Hudson Yards every other Sunday for the end of the year. And I've been telling people, because a lot of people with strollers show up, there's more people than seats show up. So I have to, like, during the show, if I see the sides of the audience block the aisles, I have to tell people, actually, hang on a second, can you guys make an aisle so that people can get out? So the last thing you want to do is, you know, for somebody, one, for it to be disruptive if somebody's trying to come through, and two, for it to be actual danger. I was performing at a French boutique once, this French children's store in Manhattan, they had supplied us with fabric to kind of like decorate the booth, which is interesting. But when it came time to do the show, the owner of the shop and way too many people were in the room with me together. And I knew that there was at least 100 feet past all these clothing racks and stuff to the exit onto the streets, because we were in the back of the store. And it was like, it was not even standing room only. People were pressed together. Mm-hmm. And I immediately was like, okay, and I never say this, but if there is an emergency, I need you to walk and do not run. And you guys right over here, okay, you'll be in charge of opening this door, and you'll be the first ones to walk and not run, okay? And I'm not saying that there is going to be an emergency, but I need everybody to be aware. Because it felt unsafe suddenly. Everything is fine, and, you know, there wasn't any, you know, anything. But it was like, I don't think about that, you know, the puppet show fire often, but every once in a while I have to remember, we got to remember, the audience's safety is paramount. You know, oftentimes I think about, like, don't throw things at my puppets, please. I have to be safe, but also you're in charge of the audience's health and safety too.
Yeah.
Okay. And there's nothing more true than that when you're a solo performer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
thanks for sharing that historical, sad, but historical story.
I know. Next time we share something historical, it would not be a tragedy. That's the only one that I've ever read about where anybody ever passed away at a puppet show. Right?
Yeah,
maybe, I mean, like a heart attack here or there.
Yeah, die laughing.
Yeah. So anyway, so if you out there, if you have ever seen something dangerous happen at a theatrical event, please let us know. Drop us a line over at info@wondersparkpuppets.com. Head over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/wondersparkpuppets. You know, or you can check us out online, send us a message through puppetparentpodcast.com.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's about it for today, but join us. We're going to try and be more regular about this.
Yes, we are. We're back. We had a nice summer, and then September we had to get back into our groove, and so we've been looking forward to recording more episodes. This is as much of a time capsule for us as it is a way for you to, you know, have some perspective of what life is like, and maybe relate a little bit to our crazy theater and art and family life. We have a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old, 2 boys, mm-hmm. and we live in New York City, and we're so happy to be here. We love our city, and we love our kids, so, and we love being puppeteers.
So thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening. We're hopefully going to be this, I'm just putting it out there weekly from now on, because we have more time, because our kids are now in school. So check us out at puppetparentpodcast.com. You can listen to these MP3s anywhere you get your podcasts, including Spotify. You can download the MP3 files themselves, if you're an archivist like me, over at puppetparentpodcast.com. And that's it. Great. Thanks again for watching, and we'll see you next week. Oh, and if you're just listening to this, we did this over video on our Facebook page.
Yeah.
Just FYI.
All right. See you soon.